Accession number 12149, reel 13.
Captain Sutton, reel 13.
Met an instructor lieutenant from the Illustrious, who had been stationed ashore in Crete, called Bill Watts. Now, Bill had been acting as my assistant beachmaster, and I said to him, "Come on, Bill, we're off." And we clambered into the last boat and were taken off to HMS Napier. As we went up over the side, there was a gunner on the gangway who saw me with a pistol in the holster and said, "Is that pistol loaded?" I said, "Of course it is, been fighting Germans." He said, "Don't you know you're not allowed to come on board a man of war with a loaded pistol?" I said, "Yes, I'm terribly sorry, I do know, I'm a naval officer, and I am terribly sorry that I unloaded it in front of him." He said, "You're a naval officer?" I said, "Yes, I'm a lieutenant." He said, "Oh, come with me." Gave me his cabin. I had a lovely trip out. All the rest were lying on the deck. Anyhow, I got back to Alexandria, and we were bombed on the way. As far as I can remember, we weren't hit. I don't know. I can't remember. We were certainly bombed on the way, in a way. And at Alexandria, I went ashore, and I reported to the flag officer, Admiral Boyd, flag officer, Mediterranean aircraft carriers. And I was in a pretty poor state. I mean, flogging over the mountains, I was dirty and disheveled and bearded, and I must have stank like hell. He got out of his chair, eased me into it, in the admiral's chair, and said, "My poor fellow." And then started getting the story out of me. Now, what had happened was that when the British had pulled back from Alamir, Ramsay's party had been sent ahead to Suda Bay and had been evacuated by a destroyer. They had come back with the story of how Sutton had charged the German army by himself and gone down fighting. It wasn't quite what happened. It must have been most impressive, because when I actually went through the rear guard, the Germans had come over the ridge of the mountains of Malamere, and they were coming down the hillside, shoulder to shoulder, a great line of them, probably the nearest thing I will ever see, or anybody will ever see, to the 18th century wars of formal armies. A line of men from the coast to the foothills of the mountains, with their guns in front of them, one, two, three, four, marching all in line, a most impressive thing. And they had seen this, and then there'd been the sudden outburst of firing, and they said I'd had it. So the story had got back to Alexandria that Sutton had gone down charging the German army, and it wasn't quite what happened, as I've told you. But I was treated with considerable sympathy. I went to see the doctor, as I was in rather a bad way. My hair was coming out, and my teeth were all loose in my mouth, and I felt pretty flabby, although my muscles were as hard as iron. And the young doctor looked at me, and with a cry of joy, he said, "I've never seen anything like it before. You've got scurvy. Oh, my God, this is good." And but I hadn't got scurvy. I had got vitamin deficiency, and a few weeks of really good living, and I was all right again. And that was the story of me in Crete. So I was sent away on leave for a few days up to Cairo, and then what happened then?
Just let me ask you about Freyberg when you saw him. What kind of manner did he have when he was addressing you?
Oh, there was complete confidence that we were going to fight a bloody great fight, and that we got to stop these parachutes. The parachutists, to him, I think, were a nuisance. But the real invasion was the seaborne one. This is the thing. So we had to hold this hill from these parachutists, and make quite certain that the position was held until the invasion the real invasion started from the sea. This was the impression I gained. I think that that was the thinking in Wavell and so on, that they wouldn't believe the Navy was going to stop the seaborne invasion, which of course happened. We heard terrific that first night and the second night. We had terrific gunfire at sea, and this was the Navy sinking all the invasion forces.
Do you have a mental picture of Freyberg as he was addressing you all?
Well, one of all. I mean, here was a VC general telling you you're going to have to fight to the death and hold a hill, and that was it, and stand a siege. And one felt a terrific thrill of anticipation, a slight shiver of fear, maybe, but this was it. Here was this famous fighting general who was going to lead you.
What did he look like?
My impression is not very tall, swarthy, broad, just a fighting general, not a sort of intellectual general like Horrocks. I don't know how I describe him. I've seen a lot of sort of bulldog men, and that's what he was. But an impressive man. He was a fighter, the sort of man that you wanted to fight under. I mean, I've served under admirals who I'd never go to war with. This was a fighting general.
What did you think of the Germans and the way in which they fought in Crete from your own observation?
Well, the Germans, as far as I could see, were magnificent. What I didn't realize until I studied the battle later was that, in actual fact, they put ashore glider troops under that initial intense bombardment, and they moved in so that when we saw the invasion, when it lit up, the bombardment lit up slightly, we looked out and there were the parachutists coming. There were already Germans on the ground and had been there 10 minutes or more. And they had been down there to attack the airfield camp and suppress the anti-aircraft guns in that area to prepare for. And the gliders then came into the Tavernitas Valley and they landed. I told you that there was hardly any water at all at that stage, you see, so that you could land in the Tavernitas Valley. Into a dry riverbed. And that's where the Germans did their initial landing. And they were, as far as one can understand, very well led, very determined, very brave. Well, we know now that that first attack, they lost 80% casualties, wounded and killed. This is very largely, I believe, because of the excellent camouflage that Colonel Andrews insisted upon. The German, as far as I've seen, the pictures that have been published and so on, show that our positions, the airfield positions, and my place where I'd started to make my underground shelter and that sort of thing were terribly conspicuous. But you couldn't see the New Zealand positions at all. So in actual fact, the Germans were attacking very largely the uncamouflaged, conspicuous positions. And their attack was based on that, I think. They didn't realize they were dropping all over all sorts of camouflaged positions as well. I mean, we even had these on the airfield. We had certain men who were with aircraft guns mounted. We put them into a circular pit. We covered them in camouflage. We told them that they were only to be used in the event of invasion. They were not to fire at attacking aircraft. They were just to remain absolutely dog-air. And then, in invasion, they were to fire and fire and fire and fire and fire. And this is what happened. So the Germans, in actual fact, fell all over defended positions, not only on the airfield, but up on the hillside as well. That accounts very largely, I think, for the very heavy casualties they had. They didn't realize they were falling on defender positions.
Now, I interrupted your story with you recuperating in Egypt.
Yes, that was perfectly straightforward, and I then went back to Decayla, which was the naval air base just outside Alexandria, and the next thing that I knew was an order to report with Kit for an unspecified flight. I wasn't told where I was going to. This sort of thing happens in war. You're just, if you're a junior officer, you're not given a hint of what you're going to do. You're just told. And because you, otherwise, the more people know as the sentence is on, the more security is broken. And in this particular case, I was just told to get into an aircraft which had been instructed to take me. When I got talking to the pilot, I found we were going to Palestine. And we flew off and we landed at Lida airfield in Palestine, and the yes, that's right, and I was met on arrival by Wing Commander Dudley Lewis, who was the station commander. Now, I'd known him in Athens, very nice chap, Dudley Lewis. And he greeted me as an almost brother, and I said, well, I know, I don't know why I'm here. He said, I know. He said, I'll take you straight away up to our headquarters. And he whisked me into a car, we went up to Jerusalem. And there I was taken to see Air Marshal Bingo Brown, Air Vice Marshal, who was the Air Officer commanding Palestine and Transjordan. And I found, I was told then by Brown that I was his appointed staff officer for the invasion of Syria. That I was given a brief, told to read up the instructions, and this was the impending invasion of Syria, where we can take it back from the Vichy French. There were to be, I can't remember, one or two naval fighter squadrons sent up to operate, particularly to operate in protecting shipping off the coast, because it was intended that there would be a naval squadron operating on the flank of the army in taking Syria. So you can see why I wasn't told before I left Egypt what was happening, because it was all very secret. But here I was now. I'd been seen the air officer, and I was briefed, getting briefed. And this is the way things happen. So it was only about 2 days to go, I think, before the actual invasion. And then we moved in to Syria to take it from the Vichy French. The reason you will certainly know is that the Germans, having taken Crete, they were considering taking Cyprus and leapfrogging right through into the Middle East. And so with the Vichy French being friendly, quite friendly towards the Germans, it was anticipated that they would give them free passage and even give them help. So we were going to deny this and consolidate the area. Well, now, this was a most intriguing situation. I was on the Air Marshal's staff. The first thing that happened, indeed, was that I got myself lodgings in the town, in a hotel. And then I was visited by one of the Air Marshal's staff, a wing commander, who asked me out to dinner that night. And he and another chap, you know, we chatted, and he sounded me out, and he found out whether I was one of these naval officers or hated the Air Force. I wasn't. And then, the next day, I was asked by the Air Marshal whether I would like to become one of his personal staff. That is to say, live in his mess. They vetted me out first, see what I was like as a naval officer, because there was still that terrific antipathy between the Air Force and the Navy. And they reckoned I was a reasonable naval officer, and therefore I could be accepted in the mess. If I hadn't been, they wouldn't have had me. Anyhow, This made a lot of difference in life. I still lived in a hotel where I fed in the mess, and of course one got to know all the chaps very well. We worked in the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. There was the tail end of the Arab revolt still going on, so the hinterland was held by Arab guerrillas, although there were a large number of British troops in the area. If you went down, say, from Jerusalem down to Lydda Airfield, which is the nearest RAF airfield, one always went in a convoy of two cars and armed. There. Anyhow, the invasion took place, and everything seemed to be going swimmingly. There wasn't a terrific amount of resistance by the French until we sent in the Free French troops. We thought that, apparently the British High Command thought, that they would receive the Free French with open arms and say, how marvellous to have you here, here we are all Frenchmen together. Then the way it happened. And moved in, and thinking they were going to Damascus, they put in a series of diesel buses, and off to the road, went along the road, and they got into the most terrible ambush, and they were nearly all killed. There was, in fact, the thinking of a civil war between the Vichy French and the Free French, and they loathed each other's guts. And then the fight really started when it was realized that it was the Free French trying to take over Syria. The Vichy French fought like hell. They had very good troops. They had, amongst other things, of course, they had a very good civil contingent of the Foreign Legion there too. Very fierce. We took Syria fairly quickly. I think the campaign was about 3 weeks. One of the most interesting things that I remember was the air officer commanding, Brown, calling together Admiral King and General Maitland Wilson, who was the commanding officer, the general commanding the campaign, and explaining the use of air power. He said that when he hadn't got sufficient air force to defeat the enemy, the enemy air force was bigger than his, outnumbered him considerably, when the army wanted to advance, then he would put everything he could onto supporting the army and in suppressing enemy opposition, which was enemy air opposition, which was supporting the army. When the army wanted to advance on the coast and wanted the navy to bombard the enemy positions, then he would put everything on to defending the navy. But he couldn't do it both at one time. If the army wanted to advance on the coast, they couldn't advance in there at the same time. He hadn't got sufficient force. There are certain occasions, which I can't describe to you, when the enemy air situation would be such that I will know that I can kill the enemy air force. On those occasions, neither the navy, army or the navy can move. I will use every bit of my air force on defeating the enemy air force. And this is the way the campaign went. It was really most effective. I have great admiration for Bingo Brown. He was one of those naval Air Force officers who had been a naval officer, been in the Royal Naval Air Service. That's why he had wondered whether there was the antagonism of me that there was in naval officers, and why he'd had me vetted before he accepted me on his personal staff. But once he'd accepted me, we got on very well together. There was one intriguing situation where Brown decided that he's going to knock out the enemy commander-in-chief, General Dentz, the Vichy French general. And he found out where the general was living. He got his routine, and he put an airstrike onto the villa. He didn't get General Dentz, but he got General Dentz's wife. And the admiral and the general were furious. This wasn't the way to conduct war. One didn't act as a barbarian. One didn't attack the enemy general in his headquarters. This wasn't gentlemanly. Of course, a bit later, we would do putting commando raids in to try and kill Rommel and so on, but at that stage of the war, it wasn't gentlemanly. And I remember the ostracism that this silly admiral and this silly general tried to affect on the air marshal, who wasn't a gentleman. Well, there we are. Let's say we had a squadron of Fulmers, that's right, a squadron of Fulmers operating in support of the naval forces on the left flank. And when we had taken Syria, I was arranged to go up to Petra to look at the ruins with an army officer, the army liaison officer on the Air Force staff, and he and I were requisitioning a car and going up there. And then I was ordered back to Egypt again. I didn't go to see Petra. I found I was being assigned to the Western Desert again. I'd been there right at the start for Wavell's great big advance when we'd taken Benghazi. Now the Western Desert, I was being put back as naval liaison officer in the Western Desert. It was a very different situation. The Tobruk was under siege. Germans had come right forward with Rommel, and my job was going to be to try and protect the shipping of the inshore squadron, which is trying to keep Tobruk defended and supply British forces along the coast. We had a couple of naval squadrons, fighters, and there. One at Martin Bagouche, I can't think where the one was. So anyhow, then I went back to the desert again. And this time it was much more uncomfortable than against the Italians. The Germans were a much more efficient fighting force. We were attacked a lot. My former officer commanding, Collishaw, had been relieved, unfortunately. He wasn't liked in the Air Force very much, although he was a terribly brave man. I thought a very able man. It was the start of Mary Cunningham's command in the desert. I didn't get to know him at all well. He wasn't like the other air officers under whom I had served. He was rather remote, and I was merely a sort of operations officer for the Navy. But not one of his personal staff, not in any way intimate. Never got there. I never got there at all.
What was the objection people had to Collishaw?
He won a terrific campaign against the Italians, but there was terrific jealousy amongst the senior Air Force officers, and they were trying to climb over each other to the top. And somehow they alleged that he had handled his air force inefficiently. He had not used it sufficiently as a striking force. I don't know. I heard these criticisms when I got back there, that he'd been removed. The answer really, I think, was that he hadn't managed to stop the build-up of the German Air Force in North Africa, I think was really his main criticism of him. The fact that they hadn't given him enough to do it with, and the right sort of aircraft to do it with, and it spread it all over up into Greece and everywhere else, was irrelevant. The fact was that the enemy had been able to build up without him stopping it. I think that was really the answer.
So what was your official title in North Africa?
So again, in North Africa, I was naval liaison officer with the Air Force, but this time there was no naval liaison officer with the Army. And so I was used as both. If the Army had any problems, I was sent for as well. I mean, if you had the remains of... Well, we did have lots of bodies swept up on the coast. We had the ships being sunk off the coast continually, trying to get into Tobruk. What happened was that the the area around Tobruk was dominated by the German Air Force. One tried to put a ship as far forward by dusk as you possibly could, outside the range of the German Air Force, therefore out to sea probably, but still, if possible, under the cover of shore-based fighters, British fighters in North Africa. And then it would break away from that protection, which you could only get at that stage, and go hell for leather into Tobruk and try and get in before dawn when it would have been discovered by the Germans again. So one had a clandestine operation of trying to force ships through with supplies. And, of course, in this, quite a number were being sunk. I had things like ship's papers and things being brought to me. I had bodies being brought in. Anything that came from the sea was considered to be my job. Indeed, I mean, one tried to, and tried to sort it out and say that this appears to be so-and-so, and able seaman so-and-so from a particular ship. And it went down to the records, and that was buried in an army cemetery. I remember one case, there was a bloody great mine washed up at the beach, one of these ones, horn mines, and I was sent for. Well, I don't like mines, but I could see that a number of the horns had been broken. The way a mine works, the old-fashioned mines, was that if you broke the horn, there was an acid capsule, and the acid then started an electrical current, and the mine went up. Well, if the horn's been broken, it meant to say that the thing was no longer operative. So I went and had a swim alongside the mine, very hot, and watched by the army. My God, I was brave. They thought it was the best thing they'd ever seen. Anyhow, another occasion when we were given protection at sea, there'd been a trouble with one of the carriers off the coast, and they sent their aircraft ashore. I can't remember which one it was, but I could tell from where the ship was reported to be that it was going to be at the extreme limit of the aircraft's range. And this was so. I realized that it was an emergency, and we turned out against the army an Indian brigade, and they were told that if aircraft were seen falling in the sea, that they were to establish markers and establish a line and try and so we were a cross-fix of where the pilot probably was, if it was in his dinghy. And this worked. We had these...